since we had the Home Rule Amendment passed, there have been doubts cropping up in everyone's mind whether the local consent provision should have been included. And the League was one of the backers of this provision, and I think influenced perhaps the passage of the legislation. And now we're beginning to think that we might have to change our stand. And we have here three men who have proposals worked out for modifying or changing this local consent provision. We have Senator Paul Toohey on my left, and Orville Peterson on the end, and Vern Johnson. Mr. Toohey is the a senator from South St. Paul. The co-author of the Rosenmeier bill, which has been presented in pretty much the same form in each legislature since this measure was passed in 1957. When I talked to Mr. Toohey on the phone, he said, "You know, it may seem strange to you that Mr. Rosenmeier and I are co-authors." Mr. Rosenmeier being the majority leader of the conservatives in the Senate, and I being the minority leader and a liberal, because we certainly are on the same side of the fence on this particular issue. I would like to have each of the of our speakers present his own form of the legislation that they feel is needed, and then we will have questions, and they might want to have a little rebuttal toward each other too. Senator Paul Toohey.
Thank you, Mrs. Pete, and ladies of the League, and honored guests. My position on this, of course, has been explained somewhat by Mrs. Pete, but I think perhaps that we should go into a little background for a minute. Really, I think some of this is a difference in philosophy of the different positions on the Home Rule or the Consent Amendment. The Constitution provides that the state of Minnesota, in effect, shall be operated by the legislature. And some way through the years, the local communities have come to the feeling that they have some inherent rights, they have some inherent powers that confer upon them certain privileges that perhaps were not spelled out in the Constitution. The philosophy of Senator Rosenmeier, perhaps, and myself, who co-authored the bill that I'm going to speak of, is the fact that actually the Constitution has placed upon the legislature a burden, if you want to call it, or a responsibility for local government, and that the sole responsibility for local government is upon the legislature. The statutes of the state of Minnesota, the decisions, for example, I'll just quote from one: in the absence of constitutional restriction, the legislature has the power to modify, alter, or withdraw any power entrusted to a municipality. And then, speaking further, a municipality is merely a department of state, a political subdivision created as a convenient agency for the exercise of such governmental powers as may be entrusted to it. Well, after the Constitution was adopted, we did enact a lot of special laws. I'm speaking about the 1800s. And finally, the constitutional amendment was adopted whereby it was provided that we could not pass special laws that would apply to, for example, one municipality. The legislature, or the legislators, being, of course, knowledgeable in some of these fields, devised a way to get around this. And this was to have general laws of special application. For example, and I think it's pointed out in your pamphlet, it just so happens it's my community, We used to draw laws, and I worked in the legislature in 1939. We did the same thing. We'd want a law to apply to the city of South St. Paul, but we had to pass a general law. So we'd say any city of the third class having a population of 14,253, having a valuation of $10 million, being in a county contiguous to another county with a city of the first class can do thus and so. Now, this is a general law because it didn't say South St. Paul. So you ladies and many of the other, Orville's organization, the League of Municipalities, Vern's organization, all came out and said, look, this is a bunch of foolishness. Now, if you're going to do something about a local community, why don't you name the community you're going to do something about? And then provide that you will have consent of the local governing body to enact the law. The theory partly of this, it would discourage local legislation, it would discourage the, or do away with the confusion where you had all these special laws of general application. For example, nobody ever knew what laws applied to South St. Paul. I can remember passing a law, as I've stated, with somewhat broader aspects that all of a sudden we did away with the civil service system in Albert Lea. It happened to be a city that fit the same qualifications. Well, in any event, this law was passed, and everybody was delighted by it. Said we can name South St. Paul. There will be very little special legislation because the legislature is going to pass general laws, and since this consent provision is in, the legislature is not going to take advantage of the communities. Actually, it's worked in the opposite direction. We have more special laws now than we ever had. We're passing them by the hundreds. I would estimate probably 200 or 300 special laws in the last session. Same was true in 63 and 61, 59. So that really we haven't accomplished anything. In addition to that, the committees, I happen to be a member of the Senate committee, the House committees also have adopted a rule that no special legislation will be enacted unless there's a resolution of the local governing body. So you get the ridiculous situation of passing a law and saying it's subject to the approval of the local governing body when you've already had it before you start. In addition to this, you get the problem that everybody avoids responsibility. The legislator from that district, if the people object to it, can say, well, after all, this was the city council that did this, and we just did what the city council wanted. After all, we are somewhat politicians and political. And the local governing body can say, well, we didn't pass the state law, the legislature did. So our theory, let's put it back where it really belongs, where the Constitution says, and incidentally, the people of Minnesota, and rightfully so, blame us or praise us, whichever it may be, as to our school system. The Constitution says the legislature shall take care of the schools. It's their duty. The Constitution also says we shall take care of the tax problems. We try to, but nevertheless, you legitimately criticize us if we don't do it. And I think, likewise, that if local government is not directed properly, if it's not handled properly, it isn't really the problem of the local government alone, but it's our overall responsibility. Therefore, Senator Rosenmeyer and I, as a matter of fact, discussed this matter and felt to get away from this chaotic condition that let's put the blame where it should be, and that's on the legislature, and pass a general law which would comply with the constitutional provision and in effect say that unless the law says that local consent is necessary, it will not be needed. If I pass a law, for example, for the city of South St. Paul, and I do not provide that it'll be subject to the local consent, that in that situation, perhaps it should not so provide. But the real question is where you get a number of municipalities and we need a law. For instance, Metropolitan Sewer, many of these other things. And in my area, for example, Burnsville and so on, Dakota County, rapidly growing, where two or three communities can get together and do things. For example, even we've gone so far as to incorporate a city, Invergrove Heights, by law. We have the Municipal Commission now, which has been very good. But to get back to the thought of the thing, is basically we feel that to solve these problems of multi-community and multi-area problems, that the legislature should take back, in effect, by a general law, its responsibility, and say that if we want local consent, we'll provide for it. If we don't, if it isn't provided in the law, then it is a responsibility solely of the legislature, no one else's. I appreciate that perhaps many of us in our background are used to the saying, well, let the city take care of its own problems and let the county take care of its own problems. But in many areas, this is not true anyhow, because they come to us, for example, a typical matter, I might say, is the comments, for example, of the mayor of St. Paul and the responsibility of the legislature with legislation concerning the city of St. Paul. Well, I'm not so sure that the legislature isn't responsible, but I do feel that by means of this suggested general law, we can solve many of our problems, and as I said before many times and in conclusion, that we're putting the responsibility right where it should be, is on the legislature of the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Toohey. Our next speaker will be Orville Peterson, who is Executive Secretary of the League of Minnesota Municipalities. This is located over at the university. Its members are municipalities all over the state, and its purpose is to exchange ideas and also to work towards the things that they need. It has many activities. It has an information service. It does research and puts out publications. There's an excellent magazine. And they hold training schools or short courses at the university, maybe 20 of them a year, for short courses for municipal officials. When I was interviewing Senator Rosenmeier for KUOM, I was chatting with him beforehand and had supplied him with the questions that we were planning to discuss. And he said, you know, there's one of those questions that I couldn't answer. So I called the league, and I looked pleased, and he caught the expression on my face, and he said, oh, no, not your league, the League of Minnesota Municipalities is who he called to find out. So I'll call on Mr. Peterson.
These confusions are compounded when we bring in the Citizens League, too, as we do on this particular issue where we've worked together for a long time. I'd like to add just a word or two about the background of the 1958 amendment from the point of view of our League of Municipalities. I think many people had been disturbed about the special legislation situation because of some of the reasons that Senator Toohey has given. We had had all of the evils, really, that were associated with the old system that led to the abolition of special legislation, the legal abolition, back in 1891 or 92 when the people approved it. In addition, some of these other points that he has mentioned with reference to the application of the difficulty of determining the application of these laws and the fact that because of the obscure classifications the open-ended ones that they had to be, new municipalities or counties would come within the scope of the laws afterwards and cause some confusion. In addition to the fact that there always, with many of these cases, was a question of constitutionality involved under the old provision, even though the courts had gone quite a ways in upholding the right of the legislature to classify along the lines of what Senator Toohey has talked about. The particular point, though, that I want to make in this connection, and I think it was not confined, the thought was not confined to our own league, but to many of the other people who worked on the amendment, was that the problem of special legislation, or the use of special legislation, I should say, was related to the use of the home rule process, that there were obvious needs, as demonstrated by the experience of the legislature over the years, obvious needs for some kind of special treatment of local communities, different from that given every other community on a particular issue. But that this special treatment could come, in many cases, via the Home Rule Charter process, which had been written into the Constitution, as a matter of fact, back in 1896, as a means of recognizing what the 1892 Constitutional Amendment did not recognize, the need for special treatment of individual community problems. And consequently, we felt that in approaching this subject constitutionally, we ought at the same time that we try to do something about special legislation, also try to do something about the easing the requirements for the adoption and amendment of Home Rule Charters. This was done not by putting explicitly easier procedures in the Constitution itself, but by following the general philosophy of leaving to the legislature the implementing of the legislation and putting in the Constitution only the bare home rule of power privilege as it had existed before. The legislature has made some changes as a result, mainly in cutting down the publication requirements on charter amendments and in cutting down the requirements of majority required for adoption of amendments and the original charter, now being 55% instead of the 60% that used to prevail on amendments and 4/7 on the original charter. But it has not gone any farther than that, and I think this is related to the subject that we are discussing. There was a good deal of discussion in particularly in subcommittees of the legislature at the time that the so-called Home Rule Amendment was being considered about what should be done with reference to the power of the legislature to adopt special laws. And the language that was finally put in that requires consent unless otherwise provided by general law was a kind of a compromise between conflicting and more extreme points of view. The theory being that the consent should not be waived in the individual case by the special law itself, but as a part of a general policy of the legislature as expressed in a general law. And it's through the use of this reserved power of the legislature to adopt general laws that the proposals that are being considered now, and that the one specific one that Senator Toohey has talked about, have been proposed. Our own League of Municipalities, in studying this, has recognized, I think, from the outset that some modification would be needed in the policy, the complete approval requirement as it exists without this kind of general legislation waiving it in any particular groups of cases. But we have felt also that we ought to go slow and make changes only as they're dictated in the course of experience and by means of classes of legislation to which the consent requirement should not apply. Senator Toohey has mentioned the examples of the ones where this, the field where this is most obvious, that of the legislation that applies to a variety of local units, but all in a confined area and therefore subject presumably to the definition of special laws that the Constitution has. And it's this multi-district kind of law that I think has concerned most people who have looked at the consent requirement. This is not the only problem, and I think Vern Johnson will probably mention some examples of problems that relate to the single unit kind of law, but most of them have been confined, I think, to the other situation, and most of these so far have been in prospect because there have been problems in otherwise in securing enough agreement on multi-district legislation to have it go through. But nevertheless, the problem clearly exists. The approach that the League of Municipalities took at the last session, and I can't say that this is going to be the approach they'll take at the next session because our legislative program does not carry over from session to session, and we have a committee which is considering this at the present time. The approach taken at the last session was to provide for two classes of legislation where the local approval would not be required. One of them is in the case of so-called enabling acts that apply to several units of government, and we could apply this, I suppose, even to the single district enabling act. The theory here, of course, is that since this does not, until it's taken advantage of by the local governing body, this does not impose any obligations or change any status locally, that the consent really is unnecessary, the consent coming actually when the act is taken advantage of. And there are many, of course, such acts. I say this poses no real problem in the case of an enabling act applying to a single unit because it is usually asked for it in these cases and is prepared to give its approval right away to the act. But there are situations involving a number of units, for example, a law which may grant to all of the cities and villages in a particular county some special authority that is not possessed by others provide for a different rate of salary for different positions or some other special privilege, or to join together in, say, carrying on some special function that is where there's a special problem locally. There are laws of this kind where the present requirement can create some problems. If, for example, Unit A is not immediately in need of the law, it may not be concerned enough to give its consent, and at the beginning of the next legislative session, even if this is effective as to the other units, its own power to take advantage of the Enabling Act may be lost. At this point, maybe in the next session, the act is amended, and then there's a question of who is affected by that act and should give effect to the amendment by approval. These things can all be avoided if that, in that particular case, the act does not require the approval, that it come only in terms of the taking advantage of the particular law. But the second point of the League's proposal is, I suppose, the more important and represents an approach on which there could be perhaps more difference of opinion. And this is an attempt to meet the multi-unit problem in a way that does not go to the extreme that Senator Toohey's has done, recognizing in part here the background of feeling about the amendment at the time it was being considered and the fear of various local units that the dispensing of general, by general law, the consent provision might lead to such things as abolition of local units altogether, and particular units. And so we had proposed in ours, recognizing, of course, that no single unit ought to be able to veto legislation that a substantial portion of the, for example, the metropolitan area might want. We proposed in ours a kind of a majority type of approval of any law that affects, I think we said, 10 or more local units. The number is obviously an arbitrary one and could be changed, cut down to a lower figure if this was more desirable. But that the consent be expressed then by, in our case it was a 55% majority. Our committees that considered it decided to use the same figure that was used in the Home Rule Charter process. A 55% majority in number of the units affected, and also approval that represents a majority of population of the units affected. As I say, this does not go as far as the other, and it may be found, if this were tried for a while, that it, on such items as the sewage disposal problem of the Twin Cities metropolitan area, that it doesn't go far enough, that this kind of consensus can't be obtained. We think it is not impossible, and that it, in the light of the spirit of the amendment, at least this kind of an approach ought to be tried before more extreme measures are taken. And this is the proposal which we made to the last legislature. I think Senator Toohey did not mention the fact that the Toohey-Rosenmeyer approach passed the Senate by a substantial margin. Our approach passed the House by a fairly substantial margin, and neither one was considered by the other because for various reasons, but this isn't the way you get a law, and so we don't have a law. And the approach of the Citizens League, as will be pointed out, is really one which is sort of between these two positions. I think I should mention one or two other general points by way of background for the questions, which I think will bring out many of the more vital concerns better than I can do and more formally. comment on some general points that I think maybe Senator Toohey had indicated. I don't know what units now contend with reference to an inherent right of local government. I think this is certainly not my position, and I don't think it's the position of the League on this general point. Certainly not a legal position, and maybe Senator Toohey was thinking about the practical, the implications, really, of the requesting of the or that the of the consent provision that this be retained. The whole philosophy, I think, of the Home Rule Amendment is that the legislature is supreme. As a matter of fact, this is expressed throughout in the provisions with reference to Home Rule charters, and is based upon our long history in this respect. And even the Home Rule Charter right we've known could have been, since 1896, undermined if the legislature had so desired by a series of restrictive general laws which would apply to Home Rule Charter cities. And therefore, since the whole Home Rule privilege has rested on the success of it has rested on good state-local relations, that we should reflect in the Constitution the fact that this is really an act of faith on the part of local units and the people in the legislative process. And this is really true also with reference to the consent provision, because the Constitution does carry within it, you see, the authority of the legislature to modify this as conditions require. It does not require going back to the people for changing this basic pattern. But much of the discussion of the electorate, but particularly of interested groups, and I think especially in this connection of the suburban newspapers, with reference to the Home Rule Amendment at the time it was being considered, was focused on the possible dangers under the consent provision, fears on part of many of them that if this were opened up too completely, that the legislature might take action which they deemed arbitrary, and that the consent provision was intended to avoid and to try to fix local responsibility. And our approach really tries to recognize the spirit of the amendment in this respect. I could call in this connection your attention to the fact that the Toohey-Rosenmeyer approach, if adopted by the legislature, would in effect restore the, for practical purposes at any rate, restore the situation apart from the Home Rule Charter privilege to the condition, at least the situation with respect to the special laws, to the condition that was in the Constitution was in prior to the prohibition of special legislation back in 1892. There would be no requirements at all apart from the requirement that the unit be named in the law, which was not there before. And the things which led to the adoption of that amendment at that time might well recur. Now, I would not, for one, contend that we have found in the constitutional amendment with reference to consent the ultimate and complete answer with reference to state-local relationships on special legislation. Obviously, there are many other matters, problems beside the consent feature which are involved. But I do think that in the light of the history that we've had, that the some provisions such as we have in the Constitution is an essential step toward whatever is to be done in the future. And our only point in this connection, I think, is that we take it only as a step within the Constitution, as long as we stay within the constitutional, present constitutional framework, and not go beyond what the needs have really demonstrated. I think there are many other points that could be made, but I'm sure that Vern will make some of them and that the rest of them will come out in questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Vern Johnson is executive director of the Minneapolis and Hennepin County Citizens League. This organization I was not familiar with, but I discovered a lot of things about it. It's much larger than ours, but it's similar to ours. It has 3,200 members. It has a staff of 11, right? 10?
9.
Well, so they do research and study very much like ours, but they use maybe some 500 in a year. 500 of their members work on resource material for their reports that they put out, which I think is very impressive. The Vern Johnson will be the next.
Thank you very much. Some people over our way call us the Male League of Women Voters, which we take as complimentary, but it's not accurate because we have on and in our activities women, including leaders in the League of Women Voters, 6 women on our board of directors and so forth, so that that isn't quite apt either. Trying to tread between these two eminent gentlemen ahead of me and not duplicate is going to be a little difficult with any prepared message, but I'll try not to take too long, but to carry this middle message, so to speak. I think that's where I've been pegged, and it's proper, someplace between these two extremists, should we call them. on the one hand, a member of the creator, naturally reluctant or distressed to think that the creatures should somehow be able to block him from doing what he thinks is best for them. I can understand this attitude, and that's, in effect, the thrust, it seems to me, of the Rosenmeier-Toohey bill and position is that we are the top, you are here, and therefore you should not be able to block us from doing something to you. And there's a lot of logic to that, and we're closer to that position perhaps than some of us thought we'd ever be. On the other hand, and this goes to the framing of this Home Rule Amendment in 1958, all the credit has up till now, and at least generally, for drafting this thing, gone to the League of Minnesota Municipalities, and now that it's gotten so controversial, we're willing to let some of that credit remain.
Share it.
And those of us who reluctantly supported it, including the League of Women Voters and the Citizens League, no, all kidding aside, this is a good amendment, and it still is a good amendment. I would confess it would not be a good amendment, however, if the position of Senator Rosenmeier, namely to get in some, unless by general law, to the contrary, we'd be in rather worse shape than we are today. But that provision, whoever gets the credit for it, is in there. And it was not thought, at least by us, I don't think by your organization, that we would have such a dickens of a time finding some modification of this consent feature as we have. And to think that by 1967 session, we're still struggling with an absolute local consent situation, and that our only choice that's been offered so far is to abolish all local consent, because this is really what's been offered so far. We have these two choices. Senator Rosenmeyer, as influential as he is, and when he can put together his equally influential counterpart on the liberal side on one bill, and those, at least the leading author on it, has been unwilling to consider any amendments to his bill, it gets tough going. And especially when we go over to the other side of the House and we have a civil administration committee under George French, and George French can be as opinionated at times as Senator Rosenmeyer, and between these two, they refuse to consider each other's bills, and all of us were left rather in a difficult position, running around, getting our knees rather ragged, trying to see and implore on both sides if there wasn't some way that we could get these two bills considered, and if there wasn't some middle position that we could pass, and we were assured by both gentlemen that there wasn't, and that whichever gentleman we talked to, go over and see so-and-so on the other side of the aisle, and we've done this for two sessions now, and I don't know what's going to come up in 67, but this, so far, is really our choice. Senator Rosenmeyer says, until or unless we abolish consent by passage of my bill, we'll stay where we are, and that's where we are. Now, we've got to remember, too, though, in the process of developing this amendment, through the League of Minnesota Municipalities, without trying to criticize them, they are a league of municipalities. And their basic problem, as they struggled with the situation prior to the Home Rule Amendment, was one of seeing an inability, and you and we saw the same thing, of local government to handle its own problems. Having a charter, for instance, amending process so difficult that it was all but impossible to get any controversial amendment passed through by the voters. And therefore, having to trot over to the legislature, intruding upon them, and they felt it was an intrusion for all this time-consuming legislation. And so that I think, at least from our standpoint, our organization, the big thrust was to somehow free the shackles from local government, especially in a home rule situation, so that it could operate by of itself and not have to go to the legislature as much. And when it did have to go to the legislature, where it applied to a municipality, a special bill, that there be some protection against the arbitrary, should we say, imposing by the legislature, especially in the cases for municipalities where the entire legislature, nor even a committee, wrestles with the problem. It's essentially one or a few legislators dealing with that particular problem, and at times that can become a bit arbitrary. Whether it's arbitrary on that bill or whether it's a part of a total political bargaining process, it can get a bit arbitrary. So that's the thrust of this thing, and it's obvious that the municipal officials would not be as keenly aware of the emerging problems of more than one municipality or more of a metropolitan area. And so I don't think any of us had in mind the problems that we've now come into during the last few years. Now, when we, as an organization, began to study what kind of consent should be required, we came to immediately the conclusion that when we're talking about a bill that affects 40% of the people of the state of Minnesota, that's more than almost any piece of legislation that you consider, unless it's a statewide tax bill, by the way, it's hard to make the case that that was the kind of a local bill that was intended by this amendment. We've even got some legal arguments that that wasn't intended and that isn't the way this wording means. But that's a rather difficult legal area and is not satisfactory until you get the general law created, because that just gets us into court. But be that as it may, it seems to us that we've found general agreement that consent should not be needed for these metropolitan area problems, at least not in the full aspects. I hope Orville Peterson's organization will retreat further from what I think is impractical position of this 55% rule. I think in the 63 session, we came that far. We, as an organization, proposed where it affected nine or more governing bodies that the majority, both population and in number, be the consent feature. And they've moved it to 55% and changed from 9 to 10. But I think they're 2 years behind us. We've been moving each session, too. And I'm hopeful that by next session, maybe they'll come as far as we are this session. At least we're narrowing the gap anyway. But the general point being, on a sewer district or anything else involving, say, 82 municipalities, you just can't have one. And we're not convinced that you can have even a number of them block a passage of that kind of legislation. We would come back closer to the Senator Toohey position on this, that the legislature in a case like that simply must be the referee, must simply give this metropolitan area the governmental tools necessary to operate in that field, and in giving it, must have the right to impose on these municipalities what it deems best. To come back and start the consent feature is almost repugnant to the very fact that something that affects that large a number of people essentially is not local in scope in the sense of any of the things we've talked about. And so our recommendation at the last session was to abolish, as Senator Toohey and Senator Rosenmeyer proposed in their bill, abolish completely local consent for bills affecting two or more governmental units. Now, when it gets down to two or more, you can get less than metropolitan scope, but we've got the same basic reasoning, namely that where you have disputes on these kind of problems between two or more governing bodies, the best place to have those disputes resolved is at the legislature. These legislators have been elected by their voters in constituencies, usually from the area, and that they will tend to be responsive on those kind of disputes as well or better than any kind of consent features that you can put on back home. Now, when we get into the other problem, the one that Orville mentioned that I would mention, it comes to where it's a single governing body. And there are certain single governing bodies that we now have that are area-wide in nature, a Metropolitan Mosquito District, a Metropolitan Airports Commission, a Minneapolis-St. Paul Sanitary District, a number of these, a Metropolitan Planning Commission. And as we wrestled with this question, we felt that under the present consent feature, once the legislature acted to establish such a single-purpose district, let's say a sewer district, or once they acted to make propose some change in an existing single-purpose district, they would forever be precluded from changing that position without the consent of the body. And I would say, for example, let's take the Mosquito District. Suppose that that they now wish to set up a personnel system, a merit system for the Mosquito District, which it doesn't now have. They couldn't do that without the consent of the Mosquito District itself or the voters of the entire Seven County area within the Mosquito District. Or take the Metropolitan Planning Commission or any of the Airports Commission. You can't change any budget, any dollar amounts that are now authorized to be spent, or any other thing such as adding a county to a Mosquito District or subtracting. In other words, anything to any one of these single-purpose districts that you try to do that would affect it would require local consent. And those agencies are not generally responsive to the voters. They're not directly elected in most cases. They are not visible in most cases to most of us. They have no review agencies whatsoever other than the legislature. And it would seem that on balance, clearly, that in the case of those broad single-purpose districts, or any multi-purpose district which might be created, the legislature, having given them every bit of authority that it has, they are not home rule type creatures, ought to have the right to make changes in what they originally gave them. And so we also propose that we not have any consent requirement for any broadly based single-purpose agency. And where our organization got to the point where we started to choose up sides internally was when we got to the county, a bill which affected a single county. Should or should not there be local consent for that kind of legislation? And we found arguments both ways. Up to this point, we were pretty clear in our thinking that we should abolish the local consent. On balance, because the counties are clearly administrative arms of the legislature, and until recent years almost totally, and that they have no authority except that given by the legislature, and that they apparently are not home rule, there is authority, but none of them are, that probably on balance the consent feature would not be necessary there either. We took into consideration, at least in Hennepin and Ramsey County, the fact that through systems such as unit rules and other things, that we hadn't seen too much experience affecting an entire county where a legislature had been able to pass much of anything controversial. In fact, on the other side of the coin, trying to get anything through was the problem. So we didn't see quite the danger to the county that we've seen for some of the others. So we also decided on balance there should not be any consent for that. The only place then we left the consent feature and urged that it be retained was for a single city or village or township or school district on the basis, again, that these are clearly what were within the purview of the original amendment. They are local government units. They are the closest to home. They are elected by their own general population.
They have, in many cases, certainly municipalities, home rule charters, and are expected to make those decisions. They involve truly local situations where only one is affected, where maybe one or a few legislators are dealing with the problem. And to the degree that there is a necessity for some retention of local consent, we felt that this was the area and that we had not seen any evidence so far of great hardship on retaining local consent in this kind of a situation. So in essence, our proposal then was to abolish local consent for all agencies above this single city, a single village, township, or school district. And I think and hope that during the 1967 session, that if we can find ways through organizations such as the League of Women Voters to wrestle this thing through, and that we can come in with some kind of a general consensus of how far we should go, and within our organization, it isn't black or white, we would probably support legislation which came as far as just metropolitan questions as being a plus. We might go almost as far as this bill. In fact, I'd hate to have to choose up if we much more get this test of strength, and probably that's what these authors are waiting for, is that some of us sooner or later will decide that if that's to be the only choice, that they'll probably prevail if they hold that long. We're losing a lot during this process. Most legislators know that seldom do they attain any legislation without some kind of amendment of their bills. It's a strange process when authors in the legislative body refuse this adamantly to consider any middle ground, and I would hope that perhaps that process will change by the next session. And if it does, I think clearly we'll get a bill that we can work with passed. Well, I think the rest of it will probably be handled in rebuttals or questions, so I'll stop at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Well, we would like some questions, if I'm sure there are some.
Question of Senator Toohey. How do you feel as a legislator about St. Paul City Council, for instance, bringing to the legislature questions which the voters in St. Paul have the power to decide, but which the council would prefer the legislature to make the decision rather than presenting it to the voters?
Well, personally, I don't care for it. However, you get into practical matters where there's one area, for example, that you're never going to do anything on really in your charters, perhaps, and that is a matter of taxes. How often will you have a local body that's going to vote itself an increase in taxes, for example? So you get to the same theory of going back just where we started. As you'll notice, the different theories here. But when we all come back is when anybody gets in trouble, they come back to the legislature. So they say, well, we want this rule to apply, but we don't want it to apply where it'll affect our area. And that, then we'll let the legislature take care of it. But over here now, this appears there's no controversy and no problem, so we'll take it away from the legislature. And once we get it away, we're going to say to the legislature, don't you touch us. I feel that eventually we act as an umpire in a ball game, perhaps. Now, for example, one interesting thing in Minneapolis that I think perhaps is wrong. For years, the legislature set the salary of the councilman of Minneapolis every 2 years. And then, of course, the council had to come hat in hand to the legislature and say, now, we've been nice boys. We've done what you wanted to do. Now, what are you going to do for us the next 2 years? I think this is wrong, of course. But there are problems, very frankly, if municipal government is going to work, that have to be solved by the legislature, because the people, as I say, in the area of taxation, for example, are just not going to vote themselves increase in taxes. Another historic situation that I think sooner or later that we've got to recognize is salaries in small communities. For example, cities where the mayor gets $50 a year and the councilman gets $4.12 a month, and we have many of these, where now the town is 10, 15,000 people. So they take it and they vote to vote to the people, and of course the people always turn it down. So sooner or later you're going to get good people, the legislature has to take a hand. But as I say, as far as our position being firm, and we won't change, I disagree with Mr. Johnson to this extent, that I think our position, and Senator Rosenmeier's and mine, at least I can speak for myself, has been, I'm perfectly willing to change if you can show me anything that's any better. Now, So far, it's been these real complicated formulas, and they just won't work. We're going to get into litigation. We're going to get into the Supreme Court. Now, I don't think anyone really thinks that if somebody comes to me, some community, and wants a special bill, that even with the overall general law that I propose with Senator Rosenmeyer, we are not going to write the local consent in. Politically, I'd be crazy. I mean, why should I take the burden? So I will say, subject to the consent of the people or whatever it may be. But there are many areas where actually this consent won't work. I think they've been pointed out here today. And I'd just like to read in conclusion one paragraph that I think is important in the Constitution. The legislature may provide by law for the creation, organization, administration, consolidation, division, and dissolution of local government units and their functions for the changes of boundary and so on and so forth. This is the Constitution, and this is our obligation. And I don't think that by means of a device that we can avoid it, and I'm not trying to say that I am any more intelligent or a better leader or anything else than anyone else in the state, except that I do feel as long as we're in the legislature, we do have this responsibility. And frankly, as I say, I don't think in 99% of the cases the particular laws will be changed. But with this power given back, so to speak, or clarified, which is what it really is, that we can affect and enact some of this legislation. They're arguing about 55% or 40% or 60%. It's as some outstanding people have said that in nature sometimes some things happen that you can't change. And you can't do it a little bit, it's going to be all the way. And I think that if the legislature is going to perform its functions, that we can't decide that 55% of the people are smarter than 52%, or that nine communities voting for it are better than eight. And I think that the legislature, in their own conscience and their own experience, is going to have to define this. We may say eight communities, we may say 10, we may say two, but I think the situation as it exists at that time is what's going to have to be considered. That's a long answer to your question, I'm sure.
Can I add just a comment? I don't want to comment on the controversial kinds of charter amendments that Paul Tuohy has talked about, but just simply to point out that the question of relationship between the special laws and the local home rule charter is related to the other question that I talked about earlier of the easing the requirements for adoption of the charter. If you look at special legislation applying to cities in terms of the number of bills and not their relative importance among themselves, I think you'll notice that there are a good many that deal with really very minor kinds of things, and things on which there probably is no real controversy locally. This is particularly true in the case of cities like St. Paul and Minneapolis, because these cities have old charters which were adopted in the days when everything was put in the charters, half of which are more than that should have been in ordinances. And so charter changes are required on what are really some of the simplest matters, like changing the name of a department in the case of City of St. Paul, for instance, where they had to go to the legislature, or permission to mail out paychecks for which Minneapolis had to go to the legislature once. And various things of this kind. Now, because of the complexity of the Home Rule Charter amending process and the relative ease of going to the legislature on items like this, we just don't see any way of avoiding this volume of special legislation that's devoted to this kind of thing unless the provisions are made easier for the adoption of charters and charter amendments, rather. We have had a proposal before the legislature this last couple of times, and it's referred to, I think, something like it in the Legislative Research Committee report on special legislation, the gist of which is that for certain relatively non-controversial kinds of changes, and what we've done is to try to enumerate some of the major areas on which this procedure would not be available, a charter could be amended by an ordinance proposed by the Charter Commission and adopted by the Council by an extraordinary vote and an extraordinary kind of procedure, subject then to a referendum but only on petition of local citizens affected. we think, and I suppose experience would be necessary to determine whether this is true, that if this were available, a good share in terms of numbers of the special bills that affect the larger cities in particular might be avoided, and this problem would be avoided also, on which the question was raised.
Any other questions?
I would like to ask Mr. Peterson, I don't think I understand about this 55% vote. This would be over the overall population of all of the municipalities involved.
Our group as representing, yes, our group as representing municipalities, and obviously concerned about having this go to such an extent that a minority might bind a majority in terms of consent. And if you call it consent at all and leave a consent feature in, that it has to mean some kind of a majority decision. Now, whether it's 55 or some other figure is beside the point of your question, but assuming now it is 55, what our bill intends to provide is this. If you've got, say, 100 units involved in a special bill, governmental units that are affected, and this affected is the key on this, and they represent, let's say, 1 million population, I mean the total of the 100 units mean 1 million population, that then you must get approval by the governing body, if this is what the legislature provides, it can be to the governing body of the people, but assuming it's the governing body, you get approval then by the governing bodies of at least 55 of those 100 units, and they and those that do approve must represent then at least 500,001 people, you see. A majority, I mean, not 500, but 550, so on. And this is so that it's a double one, and the reason this was done was that fear on the part of the smaller units that the population of the large units would dominate in determination, and so that just the two central cities, let's say, if it's a bill of that kind, could determine the consent. And the fear on the part of the central cities that if you used only numbers, that they would have no influence. So this is one of those that is added to the difficulties of the requirement.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes. Has the league, your league presented any bills which urge the legislature to revise home rule charters, make them more modern, take out the details and so on? Could the legislature do this?
Well, it's kind of a yes. No, we haven't proposed this because, in a sense, this is a substitution for home rule and avoiding any local decisions on really what have been the original charter actions. Every city, of course, could do this by itself if it wanted to, but the difficulty, as I say, in the case of the large cities, is to getting popular support for these undramatic kinds of changes, and the difficulty also of getting a wholesale change, even if it's related to only these questions. No, I don't know any feasible way of doing this. We haven't really given it any thought. I mean, feasible way of doing this through the legislative process in any way. The constitutional provisions on home rule do permit the home rule charter to, in effect, to repeal a special law which relates only to that unit, as even though the legislature could come back again with another one. But the theory being that this way they might get rid of an accumulation of special laws which otherwise would bind the local unit in ways that the charter did not want, because these have accumulated many times over many years. But this is the only way we have proposed. Yes?
Why do you suggest 55%?
Well, it's a good question. I have no good answer except that this is, again, the expression of fear on the part of some of the local units that, as they're expressed in our committee. And obviously, if you were to ask the Citizens League Committee on this, if they were to go for the same kind of a principle, they probably would have come out with something more lower than this. Personally, I would prefer it lower, this is as far as we've been able to go with our own group, and it took some doing even to get this far after the feeling that some of them had at the very outset years, when right after the amendment was adopted, that this is something that shouldn't be tampered with. I mean, there's some jealousy about this and fear about action that might be taken to force mergers against the will of the local communities.
Marvel, could I add a comment on this 55%? Just this whole business of consent involving more than one governing body. We had a bill in the 63 session that would have brought Minneapolis into the Hennepin County Park Reserve District, which was up to that time essentially the suburban part of Hennepin County. And when they came to construe what kind of consent would be required, they ended up by saying that it would require the consent of the County Board of Hennepin County, the Hennepin County Park Reserve District, the entity then in being to which would be added Minneapolis, the Minneapolis City Council, and the Minneapolis Park Board. Now, during the 2 years, and by the way, these laws expire at the end of 2 years if not consented to, during that two-year period, I would hate to see the energy that went into working out those four consents. The county board approved it rather quickly because, in effect, it had no stake in it, and it did, in some of the provisions, add some to its own powers. The Minneapolis Park Board was very slow to approve it because they were concerned that this broader park system would take over some things that perhaps they might not like, and that this is the beginning to something else, and they were most reluctant. Finally, after about a year, they found that they didn't have a stake, and at least they'd have a couple members on this county park district. And after great struggles, individually and otherwise, they were prevailed on by a split majority to approve it. Now, the Minneapolis Council found that it would have the Minneapolis taxpayers participating to a greater extent than they had before, and this was a difficult thing for them to vote for park land that was in the suburbs. And so we went through a tremendous struggle on this, worrying about their constituencies having to vote. They wished they never had that vote because they didn't want to have to vote, and so forth. Well, we finally worked out varying ways by which they could get that approved, and by a split vote that finally came. Well, then the Park Reserve District itself was the most reluctant of all, because in the process it would have had some Minneapolis people on the governing board, and they were concerned that this might complicate the way they had plans for the park district. The county board would review their budgets, and they never had that before, and they were concerned that this would impinge on certain things, and so they really were unable or unwilling to approve it. Finally, through some of the strangest pyrotechnics and reversals, the last day before the session, 65 session, they did approve it, because the alternatives in the 67 session that were posed to them would be worse, and legislators had to intercede and convince them of this. This is what was the consent involvement of one little bill involving Hennepin County. Now, I venture to say any bill such as a sewer bill that was passed, which can't be anything but controversial, affecting 80 or more municipalities, which is inevitably going to be a compromise on finances and everything else and on boundaries. Imagine the massive effort of going out to those individual municipalities and convincing each one on a subject they don't even understand that this bill was the best bill that could possibly have been passed, and that if you wait till the next session, you won't get a better one. There isn't anybody here today or any place else that has that kind of energy to spend on each one of these bills from now on. I say that from Orville Peterson's organization standpoint, get down on my knees and pray that they'll come a lot ways further than they have, because I think it's almost worse to have that ahead of us than perhaps to have what we have now.